Right now, though, our next guest on Downtown, a longtime columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle, author of a number of books, including Altamont, Here Comes the Night, Peppermint Twist, co-wrote Sammy Hagar's autobiography, Red, and has a connection to Maine that we'll explore in a moment as well. We're pleased to be joined this afternoon by music journalist Joel Selvin. Joel, thanks for being with us.
Hey, Matt. Great to be with you, Rich.
All the great things you've done in your career, but can anything compare with being an original member of the Rock Bottom Remainders with our Stephen King?
That was a truly signal event, and the three-week tour that we did at the East Coast remains like a high point of my social, professional, and personal life.
And you were here. You played here in Bangor. I think it was in 1998 when you guys were out.
That gig was one that Stephen wanted us to do, and Warren Zevon was on the gig.
Yeah. Dave Barry.
And we played some giant hall in Bangor. And Bangor, wow, what an experience. Bangor Mania is just like occupied Canada. they talk funny up there and everything.
Oh, there's no question about that. I'm told by people who were there that your work on Louie Louie that night was one for the ages.
Yeah, well, if you can't really perform on one level, like I've long realized that exhibitionism kind of goes a long way towards entertaining people.
I've lived by that.
That was pretty much that was. That was and me, with Dave Marsh, you know. and we were in Portland, and Marsh and Steve King and I went off on a, day trip, and we ended up in some used bookstore. We really went to L.L. Bean, but afterwards we wound up in some used bookstore. And it was just the three of us, and the gal behind the counter, she knew it was Steve King, and she was playing it cool, man. She was just smiling, and she was being, cool. And then this gal comes bursting into the store and walks right up to the counter and says to the gal, "Do you have Louie Louie by Dave Marsh?" And Steve King, he goes, "No, ma'am, but we've got Dave Marsh here." And she turns around, and she looks at Steve King, and she doesn't know who the hell he is. And he points to Marsh, and she says, "My husband's in the car. Show him." So now we head out of the store, out into the parking lot, and she's leading the way, and this poor befuddled husband sees her, his wife, leading this group of people down toward the car. And he starts to get out of the car, and he knows who Steve King is. He was like, "Huh? What? Huh?" And this man says he's Dave Marsh and wrote the book you want to buy. I swear it happened. Marsh told me he's been going out to lunch on that story for years.
I love that. Oh, that is great. Well, you have written about so many people in the music business. I want to begin by talking about Glenn Campbell, who's one of my all-time favorites. You wrote the liner notes and have revised them for the new box set, The Legacy. For my money, he needs to be in the conversation as one of the greatest voices in the history of pop music.
Voices, guitar playing, contribution as a session man. I like to think about like Glenn Campbell having appeared on Frank Sinatra's record Strangers in the Night, playing guitar, and doing the guitar solo on the Beach Boys record Dance, 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 and then singing harmony on Merle Haggard's Today I Started Loving You Again.
Those
are three, high watermarks in American popular music, and you wouldn't imagine they have anything in common unless you knew who Glenn Campbell was. Then you'd realize, of course, they have Glenn Campbell in common.
Jimmy Webb is a great friend of our show. He's been on with us a bunch of times, and I've talked with him about this. Their collaboration, one of the most unique in music history. I think he told us that Glenn recorded somewhere along the way every song Jimmy had ever written. I think maybe, and it was overlooked, it wasn't a big seller, but their reunion album back in 73, 74, I think is maybe Glenn's best work.
Yeah, there's he lost a lot of records that, you know, were really great with Webb. I mean, they resurrected Highwaymen for you know, Willie and Waylon and Cash, that group, and but that record was phenomenal. And what are you going to say? I mean, it was produced by George Martin. I mean, it wasn't like they didn't have a big team behind it, but no, nobody ever heard it.
On the female side of things, and I think she was on your podcast, I believe, Linda Ronstadt, she's in the Rock Hall. She gets the acclaim, but I wonder if maybe she doesn't get as much as she deserves, because I think she's one of the great music voices in pop and rock music history, and maybe doesn't get the credit because she was an interpreter and not a singer-songwriter.
Isn't that great? Yeah, Linda Ronstadt, underrated. You know, Linda's a good friend, and she lives in San Francisco, so I see her pretty regularly, although she's not, like, out and about anymore. The Parkinson's is full onset, and, you know, voice is barely above a whisper, even in you know, conversation. So she's kind of a homebody. She's the smartest gal on 2 feet, and she is way under the hood with her music. Always has been. You call her an interpreter. It just means she didn't write songs. She produced her own records at a time when female didn't produce records. She discovered talent like Aaron Neville. She managed to put Aaron Neville on the best-selling charts. She experimented with all kinds of different music. I don't know a single person in the recording business who can match the kind of breadth of music that Linda's done. And her last album, when she was losing control of her voice, is a small combo jazz album called Tell Her Jim Said Hello. Or Tell Jim I Said Hello. Tell Him I Said Hello. And it's a marvelous record. I don't think very many people heard it. And then her last record was a duet with Anne Savoie of the Savoie family of Lafayette, Louisiana. Actually, of Eunice, Louisiana, outside Lafayette. And then that's a largely French-Cajun record, oddly enough. But really, it's just a sweet and homespun record. You know, she doesn't really think very much about her hit records. Well, the Mexican stuff, the Canciones, that's important to her. But the hit records, no, she always thinks that she could have done them better. And, you know, it's not exactly what she's about as a music as a music person. I mean, she's much more interested in, say, Mexican folk music or early rhythm and blues than she is the kind of, you know, stuff that she was doing with producer Peter Asher.
We're talking with Joel Selvin here on Downtown. You wrote a wonderful book, Ricky Nelson, Idol for a Generation. And he's one of those guys, I think, that also gets short shrift sometimes as just being a cute TV star who could sing a little bit. But he was a really interesting guy, and I had a chance to meet him and do a show with him actually just a few months before his death. And I always looked at him as a kind of a sad figure late in his life, because he was doing some great work, some of his late albums, but they weren't selling, and people, as he documented in Garden Party, wanted to hear those hits from the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, Rick never gave up making new records or trying to guide his career somewhere. I think at the end, he'd done gone back into a four-track studio and recut all his old hits to sell on a TV package, and he tried to do it as faithfully as he could, which is not all that easy. That was kind of like an arts and crafts project that turned out rather well. I think the album's called All My Best or something like that, and it did sell quite a few on TV. But God, I think Rick's close to almost totally forgotten now. You never hear his stuff on the radio, but then, you know, the 50s music has almost completely disappeared out of our culture. Mm. And you're right. He never got given credit for the quality of his music, and that was something that rankled him. And that's too strong a word, but it was an issue for him for the rest of his life. That you know, he never really got accorded the respect that his music deserved. And he knew that. He knew he pioneered. I mean, Glenn Campbell started out on Ricky Nelson Records, and his buddy Jerry Fuller wrote "Traveling Man" when he was starving. And Rick's bass player fished this is a true story, fished the demo out of a trash can at Imperial Records. Honest. So, I mean, he was the beginning of the Los Angeles record business as far as rock and roll is concerned. Before that, all they made was jazz, soundtracks, and some of the rhythm and blues records. But Ricky was the beginning of rock and roll in Los Angeles. And he created a kind of authentic rockabilly sound that echoed the Memphis stuff on the Sun label.
Well, hey, let's talk about that a little bit. A new movie out on the L.A. scene of the 60s, Echo in the Canyon. But the California influence in music, it covered a lot of genres. And yes, rock and folk, that transition into folk rock and later country rock. But even country music, if you go a little bit north up to Bakersfield with whole sound from Buck Owens and Merle Haggard as well.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Los Angeles was a cultural outpost in the when the 60s dawned. You know, the movie industry was there and some palm trees, and that was about it. And sort of in the wake of the explosion, it was the Beach Boys and the music coming out of Los Angeles in 62, 63, and 64. Record business began to really take off in Los Angeles, and the culture is very rich down there. So by 66, the things that are going on in Hollywood in the music business are as hip as anything anywhere else in the world, in London, in San Francisco, anywhere. And the Laurel Canyon movie that you're talking about, really, I think they don't even isolate the music to Laurel Canyon, because I haven't seen the movie myself, but I understand Brian Wilson plays a big part of it. And Brian lived in Bel Air, which is another canyon altogether. But it's just that Hollywood was a very conducive and comfortable place for the creative spirit in the late 60s and early 70s. And the industry was very open to new ideas, new people. You could walk in with a tape and get it heard any label in town. And as a result, over that period of time, geez, just so many interesting musicians would emerge. You know, everything from Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention to the Flying Burrito Brothers, Taj Mahal and Ry Cooter to Love, Doors, what have you. I mean, and you know, not to mention, you know, the Beach Boys and all the Lou Adler work with Mamas and Papas and Carole King. Yeah, no, Los Angeles really turned into, you know, a major culture center in the musical world in say between 64 and 67.
We're coming up on the 50th anniversary of Woodstock, but from your perspective, and you've written about Monterey Pop, which was the more important festival if we take the long view of the music business?
So, listen, you know, more important, you know, tough phrase to tackle, because Monterey was certainly a much more important musical event. In those 3 days, the whole nature of musical culture in America pivoted and changed. Now Woodstock, that's not true of Woodstock. Everybody came into Woodstock, they played Woodstock, and they left Woodstock, and the musical culture was untouched. What was changed was that the mainstream culture, the rest of America, suddenly understood the vast, persuasive power of this music. It had been demonstrated to them by seeing 500,000 people show up on a hill up in upstate New York and shut down the New York State Thruway, right? So it depends on what you're talking about. That was a huge event in our general culture and in terms of the emergence of underground rock into the mainstream. But as far as the musical culture and, you know, what changed the course of rock music. I mean, Monterey Pop was Big Brother and the Holding Company, Jimi Hendrix Experience, Grateful Dead, The Who, all making major debut introductory type appearances. While it was kind of the swan song for big acts that night, like Mamas and Papas. Never had another top 10 hit after
right.
that. The Association, Johnny Rivers, even Simon and Garfunkel, although go on to have big hit records, they were no longer part of the rock underground after that.
We're talking with Joel Selvin here on Downtown. You wrote what I think, for my money, is one of the best books about the music business ever. I couldn't put it down. Here Comes the Night, The Dark Soul of Burt Burns, and the dirty business of rhythm and blues. For anybody who's not familiar, how would you describe Burt Burns?
So, you know, I worked on that book for many, many years, and that question came up a lot. And I never had a really good, quick answer. And then the book came out, and Time magazine picked up on it, and the headline said, "The Greatest Songwriter You Never Heard Of."
He was everywhere, too. I mean, reading that book, I'm like, wow, every new chapter, something I didn't know. And I thought I knew a little bit about the music business, but such a fascinating story, and the business side of it as well, that you explored so thoroughly in that book. Tremendous research for that.
I'm so glad you liked it, Rich, because that book means a lot to me. I worked really hard and long on it, and, you know, I shepherded that story for many, many years, the idea of this songwriter that nobody had ever heard of. And I would meet some friend of his or somebody who had worked with him, and I'd pump him for everything. And finally, I was able to coalesce everything and make this book. And the book had tremendous impact. It was published in 2014, and in 2016, Burns was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You just can't ask for anything more out of a book about an unknown songwriter than that.
Joel,
it's a dramatic story. You know, so his life story should be a big Hollywood movie.
I could talk music with you all day. Love your work. Been a big fan for years. So great to have you on with us this afternoon. Hope we can do it again. Really appreciate you making time for us.
Anytime, Rich. You say hi to Steve when you see him, and, you know, keep rocking.
Thank you so much, Joel. Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Joel Selvin with us here on Downtown. Great stuff, talking music at 24 minutes after 5 o'clock. And, boy, go online and look at some of the great books. If you haven't read Joel's work before, encompasses the history of pop, rock, and rhythm and blues, his great work through the years.